Okay, we're beginning here on the second line down in the top of Ayin Chedom and Aleph, Tanu Banan. Ku asara b'nei Adam, ve'asara maklot. 10 people were beating this individual, and each one of them had their own staff, their stick, and they're banging away at him. Umeit. And then he passes away. Ben b'bat achat, whether they're all hitting him simultaneously. Ben b'zechar zeh, or whether they're doing it sequentially, turim. No single individual here is chayav for the death of this party, because we can't attribute the death to any particular person. It was contributory. Everybody contributed to the death of the individual. And as Rashi says, the ish ki akeh amar rachmana v'lo shnayim shiiko, that makes it that nobody is chayav. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteir omer, b'zeh hazeh, in the case of sequential, acharon chayav. The last individual is chayav, minei shekirev et mitato. Because he's the one who brought upon the death of this individual. He's the one who accelerated it or finalized the death of the individual, and therefore he is chayav. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, ushnehem mikra echad darshu. They both learned it out from the pasuk that's found at the end of Parshat Emor in Vayikra, which says, v'ish ki akeh kol nefesh adam mot yumat. So the drasha is the following. Ish ki akeh kol nefesh adam, rabbonan zavrei kol nefesh, adika kol nefesh. Kol nefesh means until the entire life force of the individual is taken away. In this instance, no one person takes away the life force of this individual. For the Chachamim, everybody is contributing towards the death of the individual. So we can't attribute the kol nefesh to any particular person, only to the group as a whole. And that diffuses the responsibility to the point where no one individual can be brought up on charges of murder. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteir savar, kol nefesh, the meaning of kol nefesh in the pasuk means kol dehu nefesh. Any life force that one removes, that is considered to be murder. And therefore, the final person who gives the blow that has the person pass away from, he's the individual who caused the kol nefesh, that small amount of nefesh, to leave the individual. So here, it's interesting, you have a drasha on the pasuk, which interprets the words in the exact opposite manner. Which means that you have kol nefesh. Kol nefesh doesn't mean kol as in the inclusive term of everything, or does kol here mean the particular any amount of it? We do find the word manifest in the Torah in that way. The word kol sometimes means everything, and it means a large inclusionary term. And sometimes kol means all the particular little pieces. And so that's what they're arguing about. How do you define the word kol? Or you could suggest that they're arguing about the word nefesh, as to whether the word nefesh means any life force, or nefesh means the life, the entire life of the individual. But because of that, they have different conclusions here as to the culpability of someone who murders an individual. Again, do they need to murder them entirely, be the sole one responsible for it, as opposed to, call it, shnayim shasu, which is as opposed to two people who are contributing, like by Melechet Shabbat, where two people do something that one person could have done, they're not held culpable. So to over here, as Rashi says, the ish ki akeh amar rachmana v'lo shnayim shiiko. It's not more two people that hit him, it's one person that hits him, one person that removes the entire life force. And therefore, when they all do it together, or they even do it one after the next, no one is going to be chayav for that murder according to the Chachamim. As opposed to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteiru says that the one who causes the final death, the one who causes the last life force to leave this individual, they are held culpable, and they will be charged with the murder over here. As far as Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteiru's statement of kirevet mitato, it is the fact that he is the one who accelerated the final death of the individual. Everybody was kirevet mitato, but he didn't die yet. One who hit him the last time actually murdered him, because he might have died anyway. He might have continued along that continuum and died after a certain time. He accelerated that and had him die before the point he otherwise might have died from the other blows that he received. So that is what means kirev mitato. He is the final blow that accelerated the mitah, and one who was at that point of death. So that's the two things that make the last person culpable over here, is he's the actual one who murdered him, either the death happens, but he also accelerated it. Without him, it might have taken longer. His acceleration of it, it would make him chayav, because he removes some life force from the individual at the point of death. Everybody agrees, if an individual murders a trefa, that you are patur. Now trefa over here is based on the Gemara in Chulin. There's certain mumim within an animal, and it's true in human beings as well, whereby Chazal believed that they were fatal mumim, and the person would die within the next 12 months. That's usually the period of time that's used. That the person is for sure, certainly going to die in the next 12 months. And in essence, they are what we call a walking dead person or a living dead person because of the certainty of their death that comes about. Now with a human being, it's going to be a little different than an animal. In an animal, the treifa, you can check after the death of the animal. I mean, after you shech the animal, we do other things where you are flaying the animal. We cut up the animal. So you can check the different parts of the animal and see if there were treifot that are internal treifot. For a human being, we're not doing an autopsy after the fact. And if you want to know if somebody murdered a treifa, the only thing you have is the external ability to see. So that means that this has to be a type of treifa that is visible from the outside. So that way we know that the individual is a treifa. Rashi over here offers examples. Keva veshet. There is some sort of puncture in the esophagus or kuma moach or in the brain film. So here you have things that are possibly visible from the outside, things that will lead to a certain death within the next 12 months. And the individual who murders such a person is not going to be held culpable for murder because this was, again, a walking dead man. Bigoseis bidei shamayim, person who is on their deathbed, the cause of death is natural. The person is suffering from whatever ailment, from whatever sickness, and they are dying. If someone murders such an individual, chayav. In that case, they're going to be responsible for it. So now, this is different than a treifa. Treifa, we're talking about certain death, because whatever the problem is certain to kill this person over the next 12 months. A goseis, we have a principle, which is rov gosesim lemita. Most people that get on their deathbed are in this predicament, are not going to survive. Now, but goseis bidei shamayim, that is something where the person is naturally expiring. So then you can have what's called kol nefesh. Whatever is left of the life of that individual, the person can remove. So even for the chachamim who say that you need to take the entire life force away from the individual, you are doing that in this case. If an individual murders such a party, then you've taken away whatever life force is left in that individual, you've taken away. That's the entirety of their nefesh. On the other hand, lo nechlako ela begoseis bibdei adam. The machloket is about a case where someone's on their deathbed because of human intervention. Somebody beat them up, and now they're on their deathbed. In that situation, if the final party comes and murders that individual, is that considered to be murder or not? For the chachamim, no, because, yes, he took away whatever was left of his life force, but he had a much greater life force. It was human intervention that reduced his life force, and therefore the final party that does the murder is not the one responsible for taking away his entire life force, just that final part of his life force. That, according to the chachamim, is not sufficient to charge you with murder. Whereas for Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira, that is sufficient to charge you with murder. Tosafot asks, fact that rov gosesim lemita, that by dinei nefashot, we saw back in Ben Sorer and Moreh, we go after chazaka, we go after the general chazaka, that's why we dealt with individuals in terms of their age, that we assume they've reached puberty because of a chazaka, and that chazaka allows us to deal with dinei nefashot. So Tosafot says, if there's a chazaka that rov gosesim lemita, then why don't we see over here that the person who made him into a gosesh should be deemed a murderer, because he brought him to the point where he's deemed to be as if he died. Or in the case of goseis min ha-shamayim, why don't we assume that he is a treifa, and that he's already reached the point where he's already passed away, like the case of the treifa? So here Tosafot says, v'yishlamar, kevin de'ikila alav ha-torah. The Torah prescribes over here for an individual who injures someone or causes a problem for someone, we incarcerate them and see if the person dies. What you see from that is that the Torah does not assume a certainty of death when the person is a goseis. When the person is on their deathbed or is waiting to die, we don't automatically assume that they're going to die and that there is this chance or percentage they will survive. And the Torah gives that percentage of survivability the benefit of the doubt towards the person who caused the problem. And so therefore, in those situations, we're not going to automatically assume he dies. The fact that we think that he might be alive or might survive is enough of a reason that the person will not be classified as a murderer when he makes the victim into a goseis. Or, if the person murders them now, it won't be deemed a treifa, then they're going to be held accountable for that. According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bitero. So here the Gemara now narrows their machloket to that unique circumstance, saying that in a case of treifa, everybody agrees, patur aval asur. Everybody agrees by goseis bidei shamayim, you're chayav the gamra, you're considered a murderer. Well, the question is by Goseis Bidei Adam. And again, we spoke to the Balei Tosafot as to why Goseis is not considered to be like Treifa, where they will die for certain. Because there is a certain amount of survivability by Goseis. That's enough that the Torah tells us to wait before we prosecute such an individual. That means that the Torah is open to the possibility that this person might survive or this person might get better from this situation. So in the case of Goseis Bidei Adam, Mar Midam Elei the Treifa, one of them compares it to a Treifa, that's the Chachamim. Mar Midam Elei the Goseis Bidei Shemaim. On the other hand, the other one, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Teira, says that a Goseis Bidei Adam is no different than a Goseis Bidei Shemaim. The Chachamim would think he's like a Treifa, therefore Patur. Why don't they compare it to the case of natural death? The case of Goseis Bidei Shemaim, the person is expiring naturally, whether it's from an ailment, sickness, or just natural death. The person is dying without any intervention, without any acceleration by human intervention. Hi, it's Aved Bei Maisa. On the other hand, this individual here already was beaten by other individuals, and now the final person who's coming is just finalizing that death. So the acceleration or the removal of the life force was done by others along the way. So now that's different than Goseis Bidei Shemaim, which is natural expiry. Uman Demamilei the Goseis Bidei Shemaim. Yehuda Mimitera says that Goseis Bidei Adam is no different than Goseis Bidei Shemaim. The person has reached a certain state of life. That's what they are at now. Anybody who comes along and removes that life will be responsible for it. My time alone, Damele the Treifa. Why don't you compare it to Treifa? He says, Treifa, Mechatche Simanim. A Treifa has cutting of the Simanim. Over here, Simanim doesn't mean the Kanan Veshet, doesn't mean the esophagus and the windpipe, which is the classic meaning of Simanim. But over here, the Simanim mean one of the 24 Treifot that are laid out by the Gemara and Chulin, that's happened. Something has happened to this individual which will result in certain death because of that. And therefore, there was a cut or some sort of injury or something that happened that makes it that this individual is going to die for sure. Halamachatchei simanim, in the case of Goseis Bidei Adam, person is suffering from their wounds, but we don't know for certain that they've done damage to the point where the person is classified as a treifa. You haven't cut any of the simanim. You haven't gone as far as to do something that will result in the certain death of this individual. So for that reason, the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira argue. Gemara brings both reasons behind them and a pasuk. And that's what Tosafot says over here. Afagav dekroi kodarshe. Even though they're arguing about how to explain the pasuk, we saw before, that's what their machloket revolves around, how much of the life force of an individual you need to remove in order to be culpable for murder, Chachamim, the full life force, for Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira, any of the life force. Nevertheless, itzrich lei d'hani tamei. We need these reasons as well, because you could see here that either definition or either explanation of kol nefesh is viable. So then how do you know which one is the right one? That's what the logic just dictated over here. What do we consider a person that's beaten up by other people to be like? Are they more like a Goseis Bidei Shemaim? Are they more like a Treifa? And then that will define how you interpret the word kol nefesh. So the influence on how you interpret kol nefesh has to do with what you think a Goseis Bidei Adam is. Is it like a Goseis Bidei Shemaim? Natural death? And therefore, you're dealing with the entire life force that's left of that individual, and that's enough to make a person culpable for murder? Or is it like a Treifa? Only when the person has certain death. Without certain death, then the individual is considered to be reduced in life force. And since they're now reduced in life force, we can't make them culpable for the murder over here, because just like a Treifa, where you don't make them culpable for murder, so to over here, you're not going to make them culpable for murder because they didn't take away the entire life force of the individual. They were going to die anyway, in a sense. All right, so now, Gemara says, Tani Tana Kamei de Rav Sheshet. So now we have a braita that was brought before Rav Sheshet. V'ish ki yakeko nevesh adam, tavi yamaket chaveiro, ve'im bok de lamit. This includes an individual who hits another person, injures them, and it doesn't have enough power to kill them. Ubacher behemito. And then another person comes and kills the individual. Shu chayav. He is chayav. Mar says, Ein bo kedei lamit pshita. If the guy gives him a blow that is not a fatal blow, or a lethal blow, then why should he be chayav? Of course he should be patur. Eliyosh bo kedei lamit. Ubacher behemito. If he gives him a blow that is strong enough or powerful enough to be lethal and kill him, and then someone else comes and kills him, Shehu Chayav. How do you know that this individual is Chayav? Ustama could Rabbi Yehuda ben Mitera. And obviously this bright is following the position of Rabbi Yehuda ben Mitera, because it's saying that the person who takes away the last of the life force in the individual is going to be culpable. So here, the first scenario that was brought by the Braita, the Gemara says we don't really understand. Case where a person didn't give him a death blow, and then someone else comes and gives them a death blow, of course the second party is Chayav and the first party is Patur. What would you think otherwise? Nobody thinks that a person is wounding an individual, doesn't give a death blow, that they're going to be responsible for the death of the individual. They only give a blow that was enough to wound them, not enough to kill them. So in that case, the Braita is too obvious. So the Gemara says, no, the explanation of the Braita must be the following. The first person gave them a death blow, but they did not die immediately from that death blow. Then a second party comes and finishes it off and actually kills the individual. Then the second individual is Chayav. And that's like Rabbi Yehuda ben Mitera. It says whoever does the final stage or takes away the last of the life force of this individual, they'll be culpable for murder, despite the fact that the first person gave a blow that was strong enough to kill them. Amar Rava, horeget ha-trefa patur. Someone who kills the trefa is patur, that we already discussed above. That is patur of alasur. The trefa sharag bifnei beitin chayav. The trefa that murders in front of a beitin is chayav. Shalom bifnei beitin, if it's not in front of the beitin, patur. Bifnei beitin, when it's in front of beitin, chayav, then they do put him to death as a murderer, dichtiv. Because there's a responsibility on beitin of vi'arta rami kibecha. If you have to remove the evil from amongst you, if there's a murderer, you gotta get rid of the murderer. There's an obligation on the beitin to take care of murderers in the sense of removing them so that they don't stay around or they're not living anymore. Shalom bifnei beitin. Another hand, if it's not in front of beitin, patur. Davila edut shi'ata yechol hazima. Because that is edut that cannot end up in hazama. Chol edut shi'ata yechol hazima. Any edut that does not result in hazama, lo shmei edut. Is not called edut. So here, let's break it down into pieces. First thing is, if the individual who is the trefa is the victim, as we said before, then the individual murders them is killing a walking dead man or a live dead person. And for that reason, they're not going to be chayav for mitak. This person would have died or is ready, basically dead already. And therefore, the murderer is not considered to be a murderer. Patur of alasur. Beitin can't prosecute him. Obviously, b'tei shamayim, they'll deal with the fact that he was shofech dam. So that's the case where the trefa is the victim. What happens when the trefa is the murderer? So here, Rava bifurcates the din and says, depends where he murders. If he murders in front of the Beit Din now assumes a responsibility for the Torah's injunction that bi'arta rami kirbecha, you have to eliminate evil, and therefore they have to act and eliminate the evil, because they were the ones who witnessed it, so they can both be the witnesses and the Beit Din, or in essence, they could sit as the Beit Din and prosecute this individual without any witnesses, because they saw it. Even though, and this is somewhat of a problem, the Gemara earlier told us that we don't allow a Beit Din that witnessed the murder to be the adjudicators of the case, because they'll never see something to the zchut of the murderer. And for that reason, they shouldn't be a Beit Din. Despite the fact we allow them to be a Beit Din over here, so some of the Rishonim Achronim suggest that either because, in this case, the person is a trefa anyway, so we're not going to give him all those protocols, all those rights, because even if Beit Din kills him, they're only killing a trefa, they're not killing a living person in a sense. So therefore we reduce the threshold of evidence in this case. So that may be one reason to do it. The other reason may be is because of the fact that the impetus for killing this individual is v'yarta rabbi kubecha. It's not real murder charges. It's using a secondary injunction which says that v'yarta rami kirbecha, and that doesn't have all the protocols or the necessary protocols of Beit Din. Here, v'yarta rami kirbecha needs to be accomplished irrespective of what the normal protocols of Beit Din are. And then Tosafot adds an additional qualification is that Beit Din has to see it during the day. Because the Beit Din can only adjudicate during the day, they can't adjudicate at night. If they see at night, they will have to then testify in front of Beit Din during the day, and testimony won't work. So here you have a number of qualifications over here. It has to be done in front of the Beit Din, it has to be during the day in front of the Beit Din, and also we are waiving certain protocols that normally would be in place. The other case, which is the din that Rava bifurcates and says the other possibility is, trefa murdered someone in front of witnesses. In that case, you cannot prosecute him. That is because of the witnesses. The witnesses who come to testify against the murderer, they'll come into court and they testify against him. If others come then and incriminate the witnesses and say, you couldn't have been witnesses to the murder, imano etim, you were with us on that day. That makes them into etim zomimim. Generally, when you have etim zomimim, you do the asod lehem kashir zamam lasod lehachiv. You do to them like they wanted to do to their fellow Jew. Over here, these witnesses would have caused this person to be put to death. The person that they're trying to cause or put to death is a treifa. So they're not going to be responsible for a murder in that case. Because there is no such thing as a murder when the victim is a treifa. So these edim, even if they were lying, and even if they were not telling the truth, and they caused the death of this individual, they could never be brought up on charges of murder, because the person, the victim, is a treifa. That means when edim zomimim come in, and say, you imanu aitem, and incriminate them and say, you were not witnesses here, and you're lying, and therefore your edim zomimim, you should get the same punishment, they can't get the same punishment. And that leads us to a principle, which is edut she'iyata yechol hazima. Any edut that is not subject to hazama is not a real edut. The reason obviously being is that we want the edim to be afraid, to fear the fact that if they lie, that somebody can come in here, uncover the lie, and then they'll be held responsible for that which they're trying to impose on someone else. If they don't have that fear, they no longer have any reticence about lying or coming in and not telling the truth. So now we've lost a certain factor that makes us more certain about the truth that the edim are speaking. They have a risk if they come in and lie, which is that they could be now subject to the same punishment they're trying to impose on someone else. If they don't have that fear, we've lost a certain amount of deterrence that would cause people to tell the truth rather than lie. For that reason, they're going to be psulim in this case. It is a gzeret ha-kaduv. I'm trying to give you the reason behind such a gzeret ha-kaduv. So for that reason, Rava gives you a bifurcation in the din, which is that if it's done in front of Beit Din, the Beit Din puts him to death. It's done in front of Edim, they can't do anything about it, because the Edim are no longer kosher Edim, because you can't be Mezim, these Edim. So it's a technicality, but because of that technicality, we can't bring them up on murder charges. Right, so then, you're saying now that you've taken away the deterrence for the Edim to tell the truth, you've actually also taken away the deterrence for a treifa to go out and murder, because a treifa can't be brought up on charges, because no witnesses are ever going to be good witnesses, to bring him up on murder charges. The answer to that is true. On the other hand, when we say that he's off on a technicality, doesn't mean he's not going to be held responsible for murder. It just means that Beit Din can't prosecute him for that murder. He's still going to be held accountable in a shemayim. Doesn't mean he didn't murder. It just means that Beit Din or Bidei Adam, we can't execute him. But he still will be held accountable for that action. Vama Rava. And Rava now gives a similar case, which is going to ask, why do you need both of them? Haruveya tetrefa chayav. Someone who has homosexual relationship with a treifa is chayav. Treifa shirava bifnei beitin chayav, shlo bifnei beitin patur. So if the individual who is the passive partner in the homosexual act is a treifa, then the active partner is chayav for that homosexual act. On the other hand, if the treifa is the active partner in that homosexual act, then if he does it in front of beitin, he's chayav. That's again because of Biar Tara, we'll see in a second. If he does it, Shalom Bifnei Beit Din, you have the same problem with the Edim again. And that's what the Rabbi says. Bifnei Beit Din Chayav Dichtiv Biar Tara Mikarbecha. Shalom Bifnei Beit Din Patur, they're the Edut, Shiyata Yechol Azima. Edim come, again, they can't be put to death like the death penalty they're trying to impose on this individual. And therefore, their Edut is not going to be a good Edut, and we can't prosecute him based on the Edut. So here you have a similar refrain by Rava with regards to a homosexual act that you had before by murder, and the Gemara asks, Hatulomali, Hainuach, why do I need this case again? You've just repeated what you said before. All the denim of Rava that are said by murder, you're just repeating them by the homosexual act. You haven't added any value by repeating it. You could have extrapolated that yourself. So the Gemara says, Haruveyata treifa, it's trichalei. The fact that the active partner is having a homosexual act with the treifa, that's a chiddush that he is chayav. Ma'u d'teima, I would have thought, v'ave k'man d'mishamesh mate. It'd be the equivalent of a person who engages with a dead person, with a corpse. Veli pater. Such an individual is patur. Someone engages in a homosexual act with a passive partner that is dead, that person is not going to be held accountable. That's true in any of the arayot. If a person's not alive, you're not going to be responsible for arayot, you're not going to be responsible for homosexuality, bestiality. They're not alive, that doesn't apply. So now, you would have thought that the treifa, who's deemed to be a dead man, will have the same status as someone who is dead. If that's the case, then maybe he should not be chayav, being roveya, if a treifa. The answer is, kamash malon, The reason that a person is prosecuted, or the difference between a live person and a dead person, is the hana'ah, is the desire fulfilled, or the enjoyment that is gotten from the act. That is what makes it problematic. Ba'id le'hana'ah. And over here, that is the case. Now Rashi explains that a ruveya tamet leka hana'ah. Someone who has bi'ah with a mate doesn't get that pleasure. She'avar chamimoto v'lach luchuto v'nitztaneh. Person who passes away is no longer a warm body, is no longer has this moisture in them, Rashi says, a life force in them. There's a certain amount of ana that is gained from interacting with a live partner rather than a dead partner. So that's the difference between a treifa and someone who is dead. The treifa is still alive in terms of the technicality of being alive. He is a dead man or a walking dead man, but as far as being a warm body, he's still a warm body. On the other hand, a dead person doesn't have that. So that makes the difference here, and that's the chiddush that we're teaching, that Oveya at the treifa is still chayav, despite the fact that he's deemed to be a dead person, but he has the traits of a live person, and that's enough to make a person culpable by the case of Roveya. Whereas other Rishonim quote Limudim from the Gemara and other places, which are Gezerat HaKetuv, as to why someone is patur by Biyah with the mate or Arayot with the mate. That is either because the Gemara in Yevamot and Daf Nunheimut Bet says Shechvat Zera, and therefore it's only considered to be adultery if there is a viable quote-unquote Biyah that is taking place, or the possibility of the Gemara that we saw back on Samach Vavam Rebet, based on the Girsaot that say Umeitu Gam Shnehem, is La Lemute Masei Hurdus, which again was this case of Arayot, of someone sleeping with an individual who had passed away already. Vamarava Edim Sheididu Betreifa Vehuzmo. Edim that testify against the treifa, and then they were found to be edim zomamim, ein ne'aragim. They're not going to be killed. This is the central point of what Rava was saying before, which is that edim cannot be brought up on charges of edim zomamim when they're testifying against the treifa. Again, this is testimony that's going to put the treifa to death. In that situation, if they're found to be edim zomamim, you can't put them to death, because even if they were successful, they will only have killed a dead person. You're killing a dead person, you're not chayav as murderers. Edei treifa shuzmo. On the other hand, if the edim themselves are treifot, and then they become edim zomamim, neragim, they will be killed. So over here you have, again, this bifurcation of the din depending on where the treifa is in the situation. If the treifa is the person that is being prosecuted, and edim testify against him, that we said the edut is no good, because those edim who are trying to impose a death penalty on this individual are killing a dead person, and therefore if edim zomamim come and incriminate them, they're not going to be put to death for that. On the other hand, if the edim themselves are treifot, and they're testifying against a normal individual, they are successful at what they do, they will then result in the murder, the killing of this individual. So now if edim zomamim come and say, imanu aitem, you were with us, then they were going to murder, they're going to be subject to the death penalty, and that's fine. That will work. So edim that are treifot are good edim, and they will be subject to hazama, so that makes them good edim. Rav Ashi comes along and says, wait a minute. Even edim that are treifot, if they have hazama brought against them, they will not be killed. Lefi, she'einan bizomamei zomamim. Because you have a problem in the deterrence of the edim zomamim over here. So we're talking about three sets of edim. Set A, who are treifot, are testifying against the party that is supposedly guilty. So they testify that he did something that warrants a death penalty. B, the second set of edim come along and say, A, imanu aitem, you were with us. Well, if you were with us, you obviously couldn't have witnessed this murder or whatever it was that deemed the individual chayav for a death penalty. You're liars. You're edim zomamim now, you will be put to death like you were trying to do to this individual. The problem is set B now has no fear of lying. That is because if set C comes along and says, B, how can you testify about set A? You were with us on that day. C set of edim say, B, you were with us on that day, you're lying about testifying about set A of edim. Set A of edim were treifot. That means that set B, they were trying to kill them, based on their testimony, will not be held accountable because they were killing treifot or dead people already. That means that C cannot make B into edim zomamim because B is testifying against treifot, which are set A. So what Rav Ashi points out is that you have a problem not only when they person that supposedly violated this restriction or is reserving a death penalty is a treifa, you have the same problem if you have edim who are treifot. Because anywhere along the line, you've now taken away a certain amount of deterrence in edim coming along and lying about these individuals. So if edim are treifot, they're now going to be subject to risk that other edim will come in and testify against them, lie, because there's no deterrence. They won't be put to death if they're caught lying about these individuals. For that reason, since you lose that deterrence, those edim that are treifot are no good. Because since they can't have hazama, because they can't have hazama of hazama, up the chain you're causing a problem where people can't be mazim them, and since people can't be mazim them, they're not believed as edim. So Rav Ashi says, Rav, I don't see the distinction you're making, and therefore both if the individual is being prosecuted or the edim are treifot, you have the same problem. It means that these individuals cannot be edim. Vama Rava, short treifa sharag chayav. If you have an animal that's a treifa, that kills someone, that animal will be put to death. B'shor shel adam treifa, but if the animal belongs to an owner who is a treifa, sharag, and the animal kills, patur. So it's interesting. Over here you have an animal that kills an individual. The Torah says, an animal that kills is put to death. V'shor yisakel is stoned. The only thing is that the Torah phrases it in a very interesting manner. V'shor yisakel, v'gam balav yumat. Not only is the shor put to death, but so are the owners. Now we know that the Torah continues after that, im kofer yishat alav, that killing of the balim is not actually that they are held on murder charges and killed, because we have a principle that a person is held accountable for their actions. The individual murders will be put to death, but if it's their possessions that do the damage, that person will not be put to death for it. So now, gam balav yumat means that they'll have to pay kofar for that. But in the pasuk, and we saw this earlier in the Masechta, there is a juxtaposition between the shor yisakel and balav yumat. From that, earlier in the Masechta, we learned that you need a beit din of 23 to prosecute a shor and to stone a shor, because it's considered like balav yumat. Consider to be like the death or the murder of the owners. And so too over here, you have the same thing. My time, Amar Krash, Shor Yisakel, V'gam Balav Yumat. Ko'echa D'Grinim Bey, V'gam Balav Yumat. Any instance where if the owner himself had committed the murder, they'd be put to death, then Grinim Bey, Shor Yisakel. Then the Shor is put to death as well. Ko'echa D'lo Grinim Bey, V'gam Balav Yumat. In any instance where if the owner would have killed or murdered, they would not be prosecuted, Lo Grinim Bey Shor Yisakel, then the shor cannot be brought up on charges. That's exactly our scenario over here. If the shor is a treifa and kills, then the shor killed. The owner loses his money, or the shor is Yisakel because the shor killed. On the other hand, if the shor is owned by a owner who is a treifa, then the shor is not stoned because of this gzeret ha-katuv, the hekesh in the pasuk, which says that when the alim, if the owner would be put to death for murder, then his animal is put to death for murder. Over here, the owner cannot be put to death for murder because he is a treifa. Then you won't have balav yumat. So now, Rav Ashi intercedes and says, afilu shor treifa nami sharag patur. Even a shor who is a treifa that kills should also not have to be put to death. My daimo, kevin de ilu balim avibtirei shomei nami patur. He says, if you're going to make that hekesh, you got to run the hekesh in both directions. The shor is put to death when the balim would have been put to death for murder in that case. So if the balim are a treifa, that Rava says, then the shor is not put to death. Rav Ashi comes along and says, well, you'll say the same thing. A shor is only put to death when the owners would have put to death in that scenario. Over here, the shor is a treifa. Had the shor been the owner, then the owner would not have been put to death. So if you run the hekesh in both directions, that means that whether the shor is a treifa or whether the balim are a treifa, neither case will you have the shor be put to death, because in either instance, if the balim were a treifa, they would not be put to death in these scenarios. For that reason, the shor would be even patur in the case where the shor is a treifa. Now, Rava disagrees with Rav Ashi in both of these instances. Rava says in both these instances that there is a death penalty, shor yisakel in this case, and in the previous scenario, Rava also said that the edim zomamim are not a problem. When edim come that are treifot, that's not a problem. There Rashi explains why. He says, the Rava came into Eidut Zomamim Chidushu, Afagam Da'evi Eiduchi Yata Yechol Azima Mekadle. What Rava says is the whole concept of Eidim Zomamim is a Chidush in the Torah. It's not like regular Eidut. Regular Eidut, if two sets of Eidim are arguing, it's a stalemate, and it's called Eidut Mechukeshet, and we don't believe either set of Eidim. Over here, you have one set of Edim saying we were there and witnessed the murder. You have another set of Edim saying, no, you weren't. You weren't there, you were with us. Why should the second set of Edim be believed more than the first set of Edim? They're basically disagreeing about where they were on that day. Nevertheless, we give believability to the second set of Edim, and you want to eat them, they trump, and we put to death the first set of Edim. That is a chiddush, that we do that. So what Rava says is, once you're in the world of chiddush, you don't have to worry about all the normal protocols of Edut. Where an Edut, Shia Tayyuchol Ezima, is not an Edut. Over here, that doesn't matter because Edim Muzomimim in them themselves is a chiddush. So the fact that set A of Edim are Trefot, and set B are Edim Zomimim, and set B can't be put to death because they are testifying against set A who are Trefot, that doesn't bother us. As opposed to Edim who are testifying about a Trefa, over there that's regular Edut. And regular Edut, we do worry about the fact that there can't be Hazama, because regular Edut is subject to the rules and the protocols of Beit Din, which is if you can't be Mezimit, then the Edim are not believed. So that's how Rava differentiates and disagrees with the Rav Ashi in that instance. In our instance, he disagrees because Tosfot explains why there might be a difference based on a Gemara in Baba Kama. Gemara in Baba Kama says, Rabbi Shimon says, Shorsh nitkaven l'rogat zeh v'ragat zeh, so we're going to see later on in today's daf, which is an animal that intended to kill one individual and killed a different individual. Rabbi Shimon says, you're patur over there. The reason you're patur is because gambalav yumat. If it was the owner, and the owner intended to kill one individual and then killed someone else instead, they would be paturim. So just like the owner is patur, so too the shor is patur. So now you see that Rav Ashi's right, that we run the hekesh in both directions, which is that we attribute to the shor the same traits that we would have attributed to the baalim. So Tosfot says that's a strong question against Rava's position over here. Tosfot differentiates between the cases, and that'll be the key to why Rava probably disagrees with Rav Ashi over here. Says it's different. By the case of Nitkaven Lezeh and Haraget Zeh, the reason behind both of them is the same thing. You lack intent. We don't say there's transference of intent. If a person intends to kill one and kill someone else, we do not transfer the intent, and therefore it's not deemed to be murder. Same thing with the animal. When the animal goes to kill one individual and kills someone else, we don't have transference of intent. We deem it to be unintentional rather than an intentional killing. And the reason is equal by animals as it is by a human being. On the other hand, why is it that a trefa cannot be put to death? Why is it that a trefa that kills or murders is not subject to a death penalty? The reason there is very particular to a trefa that is a human being, which is that it's an edut, shi'ata yechol azima. It's a testimony that cannot be brought to azama. By a shor being a trefa, that's not relevant. The fact that the shor is a trefa is not an edut, shi'ata yechol azima. The reason behind the balim is not applicable by the shor. And for that reason, you could differentiate between the case of Rabbi Shimon of Nikavein Lezeb Aragadzeh, where the reason that you use by the Balim is the same reason you would say it by the shore. Over there, you can draw the parallel between them. On the other hand, where the reason that the Balim are let off the hook is particular to human beings, which is the idea of Eidut Shiatai Yechol Zima, that will be uniquely true of the Balim, not true of the shore. And for that reason, Rova will disagree with Rav Ashi on that point, and say, you can't say that there is the same din by the balim now applies to the shor, because the reason the din by the balim is unique to this individual as a human being, not a general principle that we would apply even to a shor. And that's why Rava would disagree with Rav Ashi. Right now, the Gemara here continues to discuss what was mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah differentiated between a case in which the individual sicked a dog or a snake on another party and it bites them, where they are patur, because it's patur v'lo asur. Or the case where the individual places the animal on the arm of the individual and then it bites. There they will be responsible. Even in that scenario, there was a machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether when the snake bites and places venom into the individual, are you responsible? Rabbi Yehuda said chayav and the Chachamim said patur. That's what the Gemara wants to understand here. Why when he places the snake on the individual's arm and then it bites, why in that scenario are you not chayav according to the Rabbanan? Gemara says, Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Kishetim Salomar, even when you say, the Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Eres Nachash, Ben Shinav Uomeid. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the venom of the snake must be sitting in the fangs currently. And therefore, when the individual places the snake on the arm of that other party, and it bites, then they are creating a scenario where there is immediate and clear and present danger. They are causing danger or the venom to happen immediately. That was the definition we said yesterday, between when someone is considered to be culpable for an action that they take versus it being groma. It's groma when there's an elapsed amount of time, or if the mazik is not immediately there and doing the damage. So if you believe, like Rabbi Yehuda, that you're chayav for having the snake bite the individual, it must be that the venom is present at that time. Because then your action leads to an immediate result of the danger now being placed into the individual. The fikach, therefore, in that situation, mekish, the word mekish here, it's not clear what it means, because the word mekish doesn't exist anywhere. You can see in the Masorah Shas that he said that the word is not probably mekish, rather meshich. Meshich, the one who caused him to bite, besayif, the human being gets a punishment of being a murderer, v'nachash patur. And the animal is considered to be patur because the animal didn't kill this individual. Technically, it didn't kill the individual, but it was done by the murderer who is the human being. So the person will be brought up in charges of murder, the animal will be like released. The divrei chachamim, on the other hand, for the chachamim, erish nachash me'atzmohu meki. The venom of the snake is not present at the time he bites. First, the snake bites. Then afterwards, it produces the venom that it inserts into the individual. In that way, we call it groma. We now have either a delay, or the danger or the poison is not immediately there. It happens after time. That's already considered to be groma or koach sheni, and the person is not considered to be culpable in that case. For that reason, the fikach nachash v'skila, for that reason the nachash will get skila, because now it's an animal that killed. Animals that killed get skila, but mekish or hemeshich is probably the better terminology. Patur is patur because the individual is not considered to be a murderer over here. It's groma, and therefore it's patur aval asur. So now you have over here the layout of the difference of the position of the chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, and now we understand why it relates to the other examples in the Mishnah. The other examples of the Mishnah, if it's davar shesofo lavo, hachama sofa lavo, and eventually the son will come to the place where you tied them up, then in the instance the person's not culpable. In the instance where the son is already there and they tie up the individual in the son, they are responsible. That's similar over here with regards to the venom. If the venom is present in there, then when they cause the snake to bite the individual, they're the cause of death and they'll be held culpable for murder. In the case where the venom only comes after time, that's something where the chamas sofa lavo, that the son will come in the end. Since the son will come in the end, it will only be a case of groma and not of murder, and therefore they won't be held culpable, similar to the other cases in the Mishnah. Alright, the next Mishnah. Maket chavero, ben be'ebin, ben be'egrof, whether he hits him with a stone, or whether he hits him with his own fist, ve'amdu ulamita, and then Beit Din assessed the situation that this person is going to pass away from the injuries that were inflicted on him. Ve'ekil, bima shaya, and then his condition improves. Ulachar mikan, and then after some time, hichbid, umet. It deteriorates, and then he dies. Chayav. The Tanakhama says he is chayav. So despite the fact that along the way there was an improvement of his condition, nevertheless, in the end, if he finally dies, he is chayav. Rabbi Chemi omer patur. Rabbi Chemi says you're patur. Shiraglayim ledabar. We have circumstantial evidence over here that the individual's health improved, showing you that it wasn't the original blow that caused his death, but rather some other complication after the fact that is a new introduction to the scenario that causes the individual to die. Again, it has to do with the immediacy of the cause of death. Is it the blows? Is it that which the individual did that caused the death? Then they're going to be responsible. If it's something that's only a derivative of that action, then it'll be deemed to be groma, and then they will only be patur of alasur. How do we determine? Over here, Rabbi Nechemiah suggested it has to do with the improved condition of the individual. The fact that the person improved in the interim makes it that there was some signs that the blows that they were given were not the only cause or the sole cause of this person's death. Seems to me there must be something else that's causing their death, the fact that they improved and then they deteriorated afterwards. We'll see in a second that they're going to dash into psukim. I'm just giving you the logic behind why they might say such a thing. The Chachamim, on the other hand, say that his improvement is no indication that it got better. It just means that he was having ups and downs with this, but the original assessment was correct, that he's going to die from these blows. The Rabbeinu Yonatan actually notes over here that the Vaglaim the Devar is actually referencing back to the Chachamim's position as well, which is the fact that he died in the end is circumstantial evidence, the fact that the improvement in the interim really wasn't an improvement. It was a temporary hiatus, It wasn't a real improvement in his condition, and that's what the Raglayim Ledavar is modifying, not the position of Rabbi Nechemiah. Tan Rabbanan, Etzudarash Rabbi Nechemiah. This is the pasuk that Rabbi Nechemiah darshens. These pesukim are found in Parshat Mishpatim. It says, "V'chi revun anashim." But two guys are fighting. V'kai ish et re'eu be'evno be'agroth. And then one of them deals a blow to the other one with a stone or with a fist. V'lo yamut, and he doesn't die. V'nafal mishkav, but he is injured, and now he's in the hospital recovering. Im yakum yitalech b'chutz amishanto. If he gets up and is able to walk around outside, v'nikah makeh. Then the individual who gave him the blow will not be subject to murder charges. Rak shivto yitain v'rapo yirapeh. That's to pay for his unemployment and for his medical bills. So now the Gemara is going to darshan these psukim to understand what is necessary over here to determine whether the person is an individual. So Tan Rabbanan, etzud darash Rabbi Nechemiah. Im yakum v'yitalech echutz al mishanto. Pasuk says that if the individual is able to get up and walk around, v'nika makeh, then the person who dealt the blow will not be chayav for murder. How would you ever consider the possibility that if the individual was healthy, after the blow, he recovers from the blow, he's walking around the neighborhood, and we say to the other guy, you're going to be brought up on murder charges. What do you mean murder charges? The guy's walking around. There's no way that you're going to bring him up on murder charges. Ella, zesham du'a l'mita, must be the scenario that is being spoken about in the psukim, is an individual who was assessed to die, va'akel mimashaya, and then his condition improved, u'lachakeach hichbid, and then afterwards it deteriorated umate, shehu patur. That person is patur, so what Rabbi Nechemiah is saying is that the pasuk must mean, what does it mean that he got up and walked around? If he got up and walked around and he's surviving the whole ordeal, it's clear that there's no murder over here. It must be a case where he got better, but then eventually died. There, the psukim are telling you, when he gets better, no charges for murder. The person will not be brought up on murder charges. Rabbanan, b'hai, nikah, makeh, my darshibe. The Rachamim who disagree with Rabbi Nechemiah's assessment of the pasuk, what do they do with the v'nikah, makeh? That says that, im yakum yitalech b'chutz amishanto, v'nikah, makeh, what do they do with it? Melamei, shechov shimoto. They learn from that they incarcerate him. That is that we don't immediately put the person to death. If the victim is assessed to die over here, we don't then bring the other party up on murder charges till they actually die. We wait and see whether the assessment is correct. So that is part of what Tosafot said previously by Gosseis of Adam. Even though we are pretty certain and there's a chazakah the person's going to die, we're not 100% certain by the fact here that we incarcerate the individual to see what happens. The fact that we incarcerate him means that we believe there's a probability, or high enough probability, that he may not be brought up on murder charges. And the Yad Ramah actually points out that their machlokah relates to the explanation of that phrase in the pasuk, Im yakum yitalech b'chutz al mishanto. What does it mean, al mishanto? The way that the Targum translates it is, Im yakum yalech bibara al buriyeh. Al buriyeh doesn't just mean that he's able to walk around of his own cognizance, but it means in full health. And that's what the Chachamim believe, that the pasuk demands that the person be in full health before you free the murderer of the charges of murder. Just because his condition improved doesn't mean that it wasn't the original blow that is causing the murder. Al-Buriyo means he has to ever be in full health. On the other hand, the way that Rabbi Nechemiah views the pasuk is, Yitalech b'chutz amishanto means on a mishenet. He's able to walk around with help or leaning on somebody or something, he's able to walk around. Which means that his condition improved, but he's not fully healthy. And therefore he reads the Al-Mishanto to mean that his condition lightened rather than being in full health. And so their understanding of what Al-Mishanto means in the Pasuk according to the Yad Ramah is actually what leads to their difference in opinion. So Rabbi Nechemiah, Chavisha Minole. Rabbi Nechemiah, where does he have the requirement for incarceration? Yalif Mimi Koshesh. He learns it out from the Koshesh Eitzim in the Midbar, where it says there that they placed them into the Mishmar, they placed them into incarceration to see what to do with them. Rabbana Nami Yalfei Mimi Koshesh. Why don't the Rabbana learn it out from the word chopper? Mikoshesh Bar Kitalu. The Mikoshesh is a person who is certain of getting death penalty. Umoshe lo habaya dal kadle bimai. But Moshe just didn't know which death penalty he deserved. La Fuke Hai. That comes to exclude is different than the case we're speaking about here. Doliadinani Barktalo Ila Barktalo. We don't even know if he is subject to the death penalty. We don't even know if he's going to be brought up on murder charges. So by the case of the Mikoshesh, We know that the Torah says, Mechalaleha mochumat. Anybody who profanes the Shabbat is deserving the death penalty. The only question is, what is the death penalty that he deserves? Now, Tosafot raised the issue. We know Stam death penalty is chenek. So why do you have thought any other death penalty? The answer is that Tosafot says that Mechalel Shabbat b'farhesya, the Gemara compares to a kofer b'ikar, like someone who worships Avodah Zarah. Actually, in Halacha, that person gets the same status. A goy, a Ovid Avodah Zarah, and a Jew's Mechalel Shabbat b'farhesya have the same status with regards to Stam Yenam, with regards to believability, certain things, they have the same status. Because this person is as if he's kofer b'maseh b'reshit. And so what Tosafot points out is, there was a hava mina to believe that a Mechalel Shabbat should be treated like an Ovid Avodah Zarah and get skila. So that's why Moshe didn't know, should they get skila or should they get chenek? And that's why he incarcerates him. He knows he's going to get the death penalty. The only question is, which death penalty to give him? The Rav Kiva Ege over here asks on the logic of Tosafot, which would imply that by Shabbat, only a person who's Mechalel Shabbat for Esther should be stoned. A person who's Mechalel Shabbat b'tzina, why do we stone them? You're telling me the only reason we stone the individual is because it's like a Avodah Zarah, then why does a person b'tzina need stoning? It leaves it as a tzorachion as to how we deal with that. Now, the Gemara says, the Rabbanan said we can't learn from the Koshesh to our case. In our case, we're not even certain the person is going to get a death penalty. We're not sure he's a murderer. That's why we're waiting. So you wouldn't have learned to incarcerate him. You would have just said, we wait and see if he's a murderer. Rabbi Nechemiah, Yalef and Migadef. Nechemiah learns it from the case of Migadef, not the case of Mikoshesh, see? But the case of Migadef, which is found in that Parshia of Vayikra Chavdalet that we brought before, over there, the law of Yoda, Ibarkatalo, there they didn't know if he was going to get a death penalty, Vichavshua. And over there they did incarcerate him to see what is going to be. Rabbanan, Migadef, Horat Shah Haitha. Migadef is a unique situation. It was a special case, and you can't extrapolate from special cases. Kidetanya. Yudeaya Moshe Rabbeinu. The Braita proves to you that the case of Mekoshesh Yitzim, Moshe knew for certain that he was deserving of the death penalty. We already know that by Shabbat. The profaner of Shabbat is that's the death penalty. We just didn't know which death penalty to give him. It wasn't defined what we're going to do to him. Because there it says, "Vaynichu v'mishmar lifrosh lahem al pi Hashem," that they put him in the mishmar to find out from Hashem. What are they finding out? They're finding out all the details. They're finding out every piece of information. They have no information here, as opposed to the case of the Mikoshesh Eitzim, where they know that he's subject to death penalty. Vaynichu tov v'mishmar kilo farash maya aselo. They don't know exactly what to do with him. They know what will happen. They just don't know the exact details of it. So the difference in the language shows you that there's a difference in the safek between why each of these individuals was placed into the mishmar. Over there it says because they wanted to wait to see what Hashem would tell them about this issue. Shalaya Moshe Yodim, who ben mita kol ikar imlam. Moshe had no idea whether he was deserving of the death penalty or not deserving of the death penalty. So therefore, Rabbi Nechemiah will learn from the case of Migadef. On the other hand, the Chachamim are the ones to learn from Migadef because it is a Horat Sha'ah. Horat Sha'ah might be because of the severity of the problem that is here, which is because we have no command from Hashem as to what to do with this type of individual. So it was a Horat Sha'ah where they didn't know what the halacha was at all. But from that you can't necessarily extrapolate to a case where we know what the halacha is, we just don't know if it's going to be carried out in this situation. And that's why Rashi says the Horat Sha'ah was the fact that he was incarcerated. On the other hand, the Yad Ramah says the Horat Sha'ah is that this whole scenario of Migadef was a unique case. It is something that was a historical episode, and it's harder to extrapolate from it, both because of the severity of the crime and the uniqueness of the situation. And for that reason, you can't extrapolate anything from the case, including the death penalty that is warranted in that case. So that's why the Chachamim do not learn from there, and rather learn it out from our case of here, Vinika Makep. Now the Gemara says, Bishlam other Rebbe Nechemiah, according to Rebbe Nechemiah, Anu Tichtive Trei Umdenei. That is why the Torah gives you two scenarios of assessment. Chadam Du'al Amita V'chaya. One scenario is a case where they assess that he would be died from the injuries, and he survives. V'chadam Du'al Amita. And another scenario in which they assess that he would die. V'heikel Mimashaya. And then he got lighter, and then he died in the end. So those are the two scenarios that are actually brought in the Psukim. Because the way that we're learning now is that each one of the psukim actually describes a different scenario. Which is the first scenario is, and he doesn't die. Velo yamut implies that they had thought he was going to die. In the end, he doesn't die, v'nafal mishkav. That's one scenario. That's the scenario according to Rebbe Nechemia, where they assessed him for death originally, and then he ends up surviving. Im yakum v'italech v'chutz, if he gets up and he's walking around, al mishanto, on his own reconnaissance, v'nikamakeh, then also in that scenario, the person will be freed. And so for Rebbe Nechemia, that's why you have two different psukim. One pasuk that says that he was deemed to die from the wounds up front, and then he got better. The second scenario was he's deemed to die, but then he got better and deteriorated again. Al Rabbanan, treim dinei lomali. Why do you need two?
Meaning as Rashi notes over here, you could have learned it all from one pasuk. Why do you need im yakum italech v'chutz amishanto?
Chadam du'a l'mita v'chaya, chadam du'a l'chayim umeit. Where it says that you need it for two scenarios. One scenario is where they assessed him for death, and then the individual survived. That's similar to Rabbi Nechemia. The other scenario, which they don't agree with Rabbi Nechemia about, it's a case where they assessed him that he would survive, umeit, and then he dies. So in that scenario, the person is not put to death.
As Rashi notes over here, the Chachamim learned just the opposite of Rabbi Nechemia.
They say it's a case where they originally assigned or assessed that he was going to live, umeit, and in the end he dies. That the original assessment was that he would not die. Even though later on he does die from that blow. In a case where they assessed him to die, then afterwards he walks around, shlomeit.
And so since that pasuk is describing the scenario where he's originally assessed for mita and then survives, that's why you need the phrase in the pasuk of im yakum italech b'chutz amishanto to tell you that's the scenario in the second pasuk, the opposite of the way that Rabbi Nechemia had learnt it before.
But then in the case where he gets better but then deteriorates again and dies with the original assessment for death, then that case he will be put to death, he'll be considered a murderer. Rashi indicates that in both cases of the Chachamim, that the individual has to make payment. That's whether he was assigned to be mitaf, he was assessed to die first and then survive, or in the case where he's originally assessed to live and then ends up dying. In both scenarios, he has to make compensation. The Baal HaTosafot questioned that and say, why is that any different than mitat shogegim, where the death is poter the individual from the monetary obligation? The case where they assessed him to survive and then the person passed away, the person should be patur from monetary obligations over there. There are other Rishonim who bridge the gap between the Tosafot and Rashi and say that only in payments that were made already, you can't extract and take back. But payments that have yet to be made, you do not have to make in that case. And in that scenario, they balance between what Rashi is saying that you do pay and Tosafot thinks that maybe you're a patur and say what has already been paid is done. What has yet to be paid, then you don't have to make payment for it. If they thought that he was going to live originally and then he deteriorates and dies, you don't need a pasuk for that. Because he already left Beit Din Zakai. We have a principle. When Beit Din paskins in a scenario that the person is innocent, even if they're found to be wrong afterwards, we don't bring them back. It's an issue of double jeopardy, which is a person can't be tried for the same crime twice. This individual was brought to court, and then they looked at the blows that he'd given the other individual, and they didn't think it would kill him. They didn't think it was a case of murder. So they rejected prosecuting him as a murderer. Once they do that, he's called a tzaddik. And the way that the Torah phrases it is, nakiv tzaddik al tarok. You cannot kill someone who is a tzaddik and someone who is a naki. What's the difference between a naki and a tzaddik? A naki is someone who is really innocent. A tzaddik is someone who the Beit Din determined is innocent, but is not necessarily innocent. Both of those people do not get prosecuted by the Beit Din. And so what Rabbi Nechemia says, in a case where they determined that he was fit to live, and then afterwards deteriorates and dies, you don't need a pasuk to tell me that the person is patur in that case. That is obvious. Now, in both scenarios, both for the Chachamim and Rabbi Nechemia, they're both using one pasuk to tell us that if the person was assessed for death and then survives, then the person's not brought up on charges of murder.
The Baal Yitzchok would say, well, isn't that obvious? Didn't we say before? How could it be that this guy's walking around the shuk and you're going to put the other guy to death for being a murderer? Doesn't make any sense. So why do you need a pasuk to tell you that? So the Baal Yitzchok would say, you don't need the pasuk to tell you that. You need the pasuk to tell you that you're chayav to pay for his medical bills and his unemployment. That is because generally when someone is subject to a death penalty, they're patur from any monetary claims. So in the original scenario where they said he's going to be brought up on charges as a murderer because we think this person's going to die from the injury, then he was patur from any monetary claims against him. Then the person ends up getting better and surviving. You would have thought then that he doesn't have to make payment either because he was exempt from payment up front, therefore he doesn't have to make payment in the back end. What you see from here, and that's what the pasuk's teaching you, is despite the fact that he was originally assessed to be a murderer, nevertheless, when we survive, he's now responsible for the medical bills as well as the unemployment, meaning that that monetary obligation exists. And that's what the pasuk is coming to teach you. Because even though by monetary matters, we bring it back to court, whether it's to beneficial to the party or detrimental to the party, by dinei nefashot, we only bring the person back if it's to their benefit, not as their detriment. So over here, since they already assessed that he was going to be tried as a murderer, when they rise and tells the ghost, mina shamayim rachmu alei. From the shamayim, they basically gave him a double ptur. He won't be brought up on murder charges because the person survived, and he won't have to pay because they thought he was going to be brought up on murder charges in the beginning, and so he ends up getting off scot-free. You would have thought maybe there you can't bring the case back. The Torah tells you, you bring the case back and he pays the money for the medical bills and the unemployment, despite the fact that he was going to be brought up in murder charges in the first place. Tanu Rabbanan, amaket chaveiro, person who gives a blow to his friend, v'amdu'a l'mita, and they assess that the person was going to die from that blow. V'chaya, and then he survives. Potrin oto, then they release him. Amdu'a l'mita, on the other hand, if they assess the fact that he gave a blow that was a fatal blow, v'akel mi mashaya, and then he improved, the condition of the victim improved. Omdimoto omed shini. Then you assign him a second assessment, lemamon, to determine how much he owes now, the monetary obligation he's going to have. If afterwards then he deteriorates again and dies, halech achar omed haemtzei. Then you go after the omed haemtzei, which means you go after the middle assessment or the second assessment. Divrei Rabbi Chemia. So here, technically, there are three assessments. The first assessment was that the victim was going to die from the blow. The second assessment came after the victim's condition improved, and now they think he's going to survive. So now the second assessment is he will survive, and the individual is now obligated to make the monetary compensation. Then he deteriorates again. They make a third assessment, which is now they think he's going to die from those injuries. So now Rabbi Nechemia says that we follow the middle assessment, which is the middle assessment was that he was going to survive. Therefore, this person is not going to be brought up on murder charges, and he will also have to make monetary compensation. You don't do an assessment after an assessment. We always just rely on the first assessment, and then we wait and see what happens. Even if his condition improved in the interim, that doesn't mean we go make a second assessment. We wait and see. If he finally survives and gets through the whole ordeal, then we say, okay, the person's not a murderer. Now we have to figure out what his medical bills were, what all the other monetary claims were, and you have to deal with them. On the other hand, if the person dies based on the original assessment, even though he improved in the interim, then that was the original assessment was correct. And in that instance, he's going to be put to death as a murderer. Tanidach, let me another braita. Amdu l'mita, omdim oto l'chaim. If they originally assessed him to die, then they can change the assessment and assess him to live. L'chaim, on the other hand, if they originally assessed him to live, einam odim oto l'mita. We don't go back and reassess him to say that he will die from the blow. Amdu l'mita ve'akel. Imashaya, if they assessed him to die and then the condition improved from the original condition, omdim oto omed sheni l'mamon. Then we do the second assessment now to figure out what is the monetary obligation over here. V'im la'achar ken yichbid v'meit. If afterwards then the person deteriorates and dies, Mishalem Nezek Mitzar Lo Yoshim. He has to pay the Nezek and the Tzar to the Yoshim. Over here, Rashi says it's not just the Nezek and the Tzar, it's the Boshet and the Ropoyi Rapay. It's everything that he would have owed to this individual, he pays to the Yoshim. Because according to this, we're going to see in 1 second, that this is obviously authored by Rabbi Nechemia. In this scenario, Rabbi Nechemia says the person is no longer going to be brought up on murder charges. Since they're not brought up on murder charges, there's a monetary obligation. Problem is that the victim died. You can't pay the victim the monetary damages. The answer is you give those monetary damages to his inheritors. And according to Rashi, that is, Vuadin the Ripoy is Shevet Uboshet, Nezek Tzar, all the five things that a person be chayav for in these scenarios, he has to pay to the individual. On the other hand, the Yad Ramah, others suggest over here, Po Yirapay is not paid to the Yorshim because that's only if Po Yirapay. If he is cured, he's going to pay for the medical bills that are associated with that. But the Indian Shevet, it says, Vishifto Yitain, that Shifto, his unemployment is given no matter what. So the Yorshim will get Shevet, as well as the items that are mentioned in the Gemara, the Nezek and Tzar, but they will not get Ripoy. So for the Rashi, you get all five things, and for the Raya Ramah, you get everything besides the medical compensation, because Rapo Yirapay only applies if Rapo Yirapay, if he is cured or he's going through medical treatment. So then the Gemara says, Meimatai Mishalem, Mishashi Iko. You're responsible for the medical bills and all these things from the moment that he hit him. Meaning from the time of the blow. Even though at the time of the blow they thought he was going to die, nevertheless when they reassess him to live, we don't say from that point forward he has to pay, we say retroactively he has to pay from the moment of the blow. Ustama Reb Nechemia. And obviously this Breita is following the position of Reb Nechemia, who believes that if a person's condition improves in the interim, that is enough to deem them alive, and the person will no longer be brought up on murder charges. Obviously for the Chachamim, there's still murder charges here, and he won't have to pay anything because there is murder. Alright, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Ayin Chet Amud Bet.